Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Well, as October comes to a close, it will go down as the deadliest month yet for Americans in the eight-year Afghanistan war. 53 Americans killed this month. The previous record had just been set in August, 51. A total of 275 Americans have been killed in the war this year, as President Obama considers the request for 40,000 more troops from General Stanley McChrystal, who is there leading the charge. Here is General McChrystal speaking recently on why things are getting worse after 8 years of the American presence.
One is the insurgency grew. Second is, in some cases, expectations, as we talked earlier, some realistic and some unrealistic, were not met, and that's created frustration. I will tell you, I also believe it took us longer than I wish it had to recognize this as a serious insurgency.
General McChrystal. So the debate within the White House seems centered on the question of more troops versus the status quo. But there is a third option that a few people in policy circles are now willing to say out loud: withdraw. New York Times columnist Thomas Friedman, fresh from playing 5 hours of golf with the president, as you may have heard, wrote a column yesterday calling for the U.S. to reduce its footprint in Afghanistan. Friedman and Obama may not be teeing off again together anytime soon, eh? The Friedman column quoted as one of its sources Michael Mandelbaum, who joins us now. He directs the American Foreign Policy Program at the Johns Hopkins University School of Advanced International Studies. And it's interesting that Mandelbaum gets cited here because his last book was called The Case for Goliath, How America Acts as the World's Government in the 21st Century, in which he argued that the United States dominant in global affairs is basically a good thing. So, Professor Mandelbaum, thank you for coming on. Welcome back to WNYC.
It's a pleasure to be with you.
And Tom Friedman quoted from you as one of his three main reasons for shrinking our presence in Afghanistan. You said, quote, "People do not change when we tell them they should. They change when they tell themselves they must." How does that relate to the situation in Afghanistan now?
It relates, I think, in this way, and contributes to my own skepticism about the wisdom of escalating, of adding troops in Afghanistan. The military, General McChrystal and others, in making the case for sending more troops, always emphasize that a mere military effort will not suffice to secure our ends. There has to be a political dimension to the strategy. They say, almost in so many words, that even sending 40,000 troops more won't work unless we have an effective political partner in Afghanistan, unless we have a responsive, effective, non-corrupt Afghan government. Well, I think the chances of producing that are virtually negligible. And certainly, as I said in the quote in the Thomas Friedman column, if there is to be an Afghan partner that can help prevail, it won't come about just because we want to have one. An effective political component of the military strategy that General McChrystal and others are proposing has to come from the Afghans themselves, and I see no evidence that it is coming. And that's one of the reasons, although not the only reason, that I'm quite skeptical that it makes sense to send more troops to Afghanistan.
The Karzai government couldn't be a legitimate partner for nation building?
I don't see any evidence that it is. We hear more and more reports of vast corruption, conceivably involving the president's family. We know with almost certainty that there were widespread irregularities in the recent election, so many that the election is now being rerun. To put it bluntly, it seems that Karzai stole the election. But I don't think we have any reason to believe that the redo of the election is going to be an awful lot fairer, or even if it is, that it will engender the kind of trust and confidence in the Karzai government among Afghans themselves that our military says is necessary to make the addition of 40,000 American troops a useful and effective tactic on the way to achieving our goals.
So do you share Friedman's conclusion that shrinking our presence in Afghanistan is the way to go?
I think ultimately it is the way to go. I certainly would not add 40,000 troops. In the first instance, I would do what some recent newspaper articles suggest is being considered in Washington, and that is shrinking our goals. My understanding is that in February and March, the president conducted a review of American policy in Afghanistan and decided that we ought to try to win. And by win, I understand he meant have the entire country under the effective control of a pro-American, reasonably competent government in Kabul. He then asked General McChrystal, he sent General McChrystal to be the commander in Afghanistan, replacing the existing commander, and asked him what forces he needed to achieve this goal. And McChrystal came back with the recommendation of at least 40,000 troops. I don't blame the military, and I don't blame General McChrystal for the request that he's made, because I think he was simply responding to a question that the civilian authorities had given him, namely, how much will it take to achieve this goal? Well, because it's so expensive to achieve this goal, and because I at least am skeptical that even 40,000 more troops will achieve it, I think we ought to reduce our goal. I don't think we ought to aspire to the kind of victory as defined originally in February and March that President Obama set. I think that would be desirable, but I don't think it's necessary for American national interest. Our national interest in Afghanistan is simply that the al-Qaeda group that used Afghanistan as a base for attacking us on September 11, 2001, not reconstitute itself on Afghan territory. And I think we can probably achieve that with fewer forces than General McChrystal requested, and I think fewer forces than we have there now.
Listeners, we're getting the case for shrinking our presence in Afghanistan from Michael Mandelbaum of the Johns Hopkins School of Advanced International Studies, also the author of the book, The Case for Goliath, How America Acts as the World's Government in the 21st Century. We can take your phone calls. Anybody originally from Afghanistan listening right now and want to react to this with respect to the implications for your country of origin of the U.S. building up or holding the status quo, which is about 68,000 troops, or shrinking, 212-433-WNYC, any Afghanistan war vets or loved ones of troops over there or anyone else, 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692, or post to WNYC.org, click on Brian Lehr Show. Is this option, by the way, Professor Mandelbaum, just not on the table at all in the White House? Is this something that you and Thomas Friedman and others are talking about, but in the White House they're either considering status quo or various levels of buildup?
My impression is that all options have been under consideration, but that the live options, the likely options, are either fulfilling General McChrystal's request or doing something less, perhaps sending 20,000 troops, but sending them for a defined period, say 18 months. I don't think that immediate reductions are high on the agenda, and perhaps that's not a good idea. But I do think that we ought to be thinking over the long term about reducing our presence, and I think that that is the case for reasons having to do not with Afghanistan, but with our other interests in the region and globally. Yet another reason that I'm very skeptical of escalating in Afghanistan is that I think that for the United States, it is not the most important country in that part of the world. I think that for various reasons, Iraq, Iran, and Pakistan are all more important. And as a general principle, I think it's not a good idea to put all of or most of your efforts in a region into a country that's only fourth in importance. I think this is a matter of priorities.
Before we take some phone calls, and our first call is someone originally from Afghanistan who seems to totally disagree with you, but how does this comport with the theme of your book, The Case for Goliath, how America acts as the world's government in the 21st century. We talked about it when the book came out, and you were arguing for a very strong American presence in the world as, if not, you know, a hegemon, the global leader.
Well, I continue to believe in a very strong American presence in the world, although I think that the constructive and even necessary American role in the world is in jeopardy, not from Afghanistan or Iraq, but from the fiscal crisis that we face. And I'll be publishing a book next year making that case, but precisely because the United States is so important, but also because our resources are strained, I think we have to set priorities. And I think that there are things that are more important to the United States and to our role in the world than trying to pacify all of Afghanistan. Don't get me wrong, I think it would be a good thing if we could achieve our maximal goals in Afghanistan, and it would certainly be a good thing for most of the Afghan people. But given our global responsibilities, I think we do have to set priorities, and I think that the maximal goal in Afghanistan, as it has been articulated, is not, in my judgment, a high priority.
And you can consider this an invitation for next year when your book comes out. And Masood in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Thank you so much for calling.
Brian, good morning. I have the dearest respect for you, but I don't know about your guest these days. First of all, this gentleman has never been in Afghanistan. I'm surprised that he writes a book about our country. The issue in Afghanistan is this. When you guys invaded to our country, tried to clean up Taliban, which is only an ideology, not a group, because I get tired of the people say there are Taliban in Afghanistan. Taliban is an Arabic word for an educator. So these people, they are very Islamic fundamentalists. They educate the Islam. That's what they call them, Taliban. There's only three groups in Afghanistan, Pashto, the remaining of the Persian Empire, which is Afghanistan, main Afghanistan, and the north, which is part of the Chinese and Uzbeks. My problem with all of your guests, you guys made a deal with the devils. The people in Afghanistan, they don't trust America and NATO's forces for only one reason. When you made a deal with a dishwasher, Karzan was a dishwasher in Maryland. His brother was a dishwasher in California, and he's a paid informant in CIA. It was all over the New York Times yesterday.
So, Masood, let me follow up and ask, if Karzai is not to be trusted, then how will more American troops in alliance with Karzai develop the trust, which is supposed to be the goal or part of the goal of the operation?
I have a great answer for you. Remember what you did in Iraq, 52 wanted, and Saddam was number one? The NATO forces, they can arrest these people for corruption. You own our country right now. You put the money in it. You have the power to arrest these people. Once you arrest these people, or we call the governors, all the you call them warlords, but they're not warlords. They were a bunch of corrupted governors in the old regime, in the communist regime. They took the gun and they fight with you against the Russians.
So then, Masood, I'm taking you seriously here. Then what happens if NATO arrests the Karzai government leaders and then NATO runs Afghanistan and creates a government like they did in Iraq?
No, not the one that they did in Iraq and sending a person that put what we call we in Afghanistan, we're very over, we're worried about it, like the memorandum number one, which dismantled the Baath Party. That was a mistake. What we want you to do is, guys, you come to our country, arrest all these people. Believe me, we're not stupid. We will rise. There will be somebody rise. And you're not, guys, aren't stupid. You have intelligence on everybody right now. You have established community that you can gather the information. And then by increasing the forces, people in our country start trusting you. Nobody wants to go to the Taliban or goes to the... The reason you do, and this is the policy with all your guests, that they encourage making the deal with a less evil person. Middle East culture is not American culture. It's not like a Italian culture that you infiltrate in mafia and you go and make a deal with a less soldier and say, well, we're gonna hire you as informant because you're after the Godfather. Middle East culture is different, and that's the problem I have with all your guests, all policymakers in this country. They never live in our culture. They don't know about that. They just got a couple of friends in the university, John Hopkins, which I call him token of this country. And they think they know about our country.
Masood, hang on. Let's get a response from Michael Mandelbaum. And Michael, Masood is a fascinating caller. He says he wants America in Afghanistan. He just wants them to arrest the Karzai government instead of allying with it.
Well, let me respond with a couple of points. First, just to correct the record, I did not and have not written a book about Afghanistan. It's the book to which you referred. The Case for Goliath is about American foreign policy. And second, I said that the American interest in Afghanistan had to do not with the Taliban or the Taliban form or way of thinking, but with al-Qaeda, which attacked the United States on September 11, 2001. And any group that attacks your country is a group that is of interest to your foreign policy. Now, the point that I think he's making really, I think, supports one of my points. On the one hand, he says that Americans do not understand the region and do not understand Afghanistan and do not understand the local culture, which I'm perfectly willing to believe. But second, he wants us to have to take an even more extensive role.
Yes, but if I understand Masoud, he's saying basically it's the Pottery Barn rule. We broke it with the invasion. We bought it. We have a responsibility now to install something clean.
Well, I am skeptical that we have the wisdom or the knowledge or the power to get things right in Afghanistan. So I would take his point about American unfamiliarity with Afghan culture to its logical conclusion and say that we don't have the knowledge or the skills to run the country or to rebuild it. And I would also make one other point with which I think the caller would not agree, and which really is in violation of the Pottery Barn rule, which I believe Thomas Friedman also coined, and that is
or Colin Powell.
Or Colin Powell. We really do not have a national interest. We don't have a powerful national interest in reconstructing Afghanistan with all the time and effort and blood and money that that would require. We have a supreme national interest in protecting the United States, and I think that we can achieve that interest where Afghanistan is concerned with fewer troops and at a lower level of effort. Now, that does not solve the problems that Afghanistan has. And it's true that the United States has contributed to those problems, but we have contributed to them because we were attacked from Afghanistan. Mm-hmm. And I don't think it's reasonable to expect any country to be indifferent to a country from which it's been attacked.
And I was going to allow Masoud to come back at you one more time, but he hung up. So, Masoud, call us again on another day and keep your voice in this Afghanistan policy conversation. Ali in Patterson, you're on WNYC. Hello, Ali.
Hi, good morning, gentlemen.
So what are you thinking?
I just have two questions. The first question is, if America were to pull out sort of in line with what Mr. Mendelbaum is talking about, what
And I'm sorry, just for context, my screener said you said your parents are from Afghanistan, correct?
Yeah. I was born in New Jersey, but my parents came in the 70s.
Okay.
So if the U.S. were to pull out, I guess in line with what Mr. Mendelbaum is talking about, what does he think the implications would be in the region, specifically in Pakistan? And I guess a more global question would be, if we were to sort of take his strategy and pull out of Afghanistan or reduce our presence, what does he think the implications would be for U.S. hegemony and global domination? And I think Mr. Mandelbaum might be more likely to talk about this because he seems to think that U.S., you know, hegemony and domination are good. So, you know, the question would be sort of like the big elephant in the room. I mean, the U.S. hegemony and domination is at least in part based on countering Russia and China. What does he think? How does he think Afghanistan plays in to countering Russia and China?
Okay.
I mean, we're not.
I gotcha. Good question, Michael Mendelbaum.
Yeah, those are
what
good
about
questions. First of all, let me just say about American hegemony and domination. I make the case for a large American role in the world as being good for the world in the case for Goliath. And indeed, I argue there, and your listeners may be interested in consulting this, I make the case that actually other countries want the United States to play this role. So it's not just a selfish initiative by the United States. It's something that other countries want. But leaving that aside, I think that the caller asked a very important question. Let me say first, I'm not suggesting that the United States pull out immediately or even reduce its forces immediately. I don't know what the optimal troop level for Afghanistan is from the point of view of American interest. I do think over the long term we do have an interest in reducing our footprint
But if we reduce our footprint there, doesn't it just leave the troops that are there more in harm's way and with no opportunity to accomplish anything significant?
Well, I was coming to that, and that's a very good question. I think the fewer troops we have, the less of Afghanistan the central government is going to be able to control. And I noticed in the paper this morning, there have been several stories about concentrating on the highly densely populated areas of Afghanistan and not trying to control 24 hours a day the less populated areas. And I think that is something that it would be likely to happen and would not necessarily be devastating for American interests. Now, to the extent that those opposed to the United States make progress, make gains in Afghanistan, that's not good for the United States. To the extent that the United States does not succeed in Afghanistan, that is not good for the American global position. So I would not wish to argue that this is necessarily a win-win situation.
Although, Thomas Friedman, in that column yesterday where he quoted you, actually went further. He said, not fighting in Afghanistan will make America strong, despite the general perception that it would make us look weak. He said China, Russia, and Al-Qaeda all love the idea of America doing a long, slow bleed in Afghanistan. I don't, quoting Thomas Friedman.
Well, I think the point here is that even if you think that drawing back in Afghanistan may, at least in the short run, weaken the American position in that part of the world. And it may. I think we simply don't know. The question is, what would weaken us more in the long term, reducing or expanding? And I agree with Tom Friedman that, on balance, in my judgment, expanding our presence would weaken us more than contracting it. But
now,
I don't wish to... I don't wish to dismiss the caller's point. I'm not sure that he's sympathetic to the proposition that a strong United States is good for the world. But in any event, I don't think it's fair for me or anybody to say everything will be for the best and the best of all possible worlds.
And Ali, thank you very much for your call. Now, we're just about out of time, but I did notice that you wrote a book in 2005 called The Meaning of Sports, Why Americans Watch Baseball, Basketball, and Football, and What They See When They Do. That was you, wasn't it?
It was indeed.
So answer me one question.
Sure.
Why would people pay $700 to sit in an awful rain in the Bronx just to watch men with wooden sticks try to hit a small round object?
Well, it's a very good question, but the answer, the crucial part is in the rain in late November. The book explains why people will pay not $700 but $70 to watch men with sticks play this game in the summer. Baseball is the summer game, and it is a travesty to have the World Series being played on Halloween, and people who read The Meaning of Sports will understand why tradition is particularly important to baseball. Baseball is about the past, and the chapter on baseball is called The Remembrance of Things Past. And therefore, those of us who are baseball aficionados are outraged by how late the World Series comes. It's as bad as aluminum bats and artificial turf.
Well, the way things are going, next year we'll combine the two conversations that we had and be talking about the World Series on Veterans Day.
I look forward to that.
Thank you very much, Michael Mandelbaum, professor of foreign policy studies at Johns Hopkins University School of International Studies and author of The Case for Goliath, How America Acts as the World's Government in the 21st Century. Thank you very much.
My pleasure.
Brian Lehrer, WNYC. Coming up next, a debate on 401ks in the modern world of retirement planning. Are they just a way for employers to shirk their responsibility to offer a pension plan, or are they working for Americans? Stay with us.